What we would like to do is help you all learn how to identify your unconscious belief, because the hardest part sometimes about really making a deep change is identifying those limiting beliefs. And sometimes they can be hard because they are so, so unconscious. And what we have found is that it takes longer to identify an unconscious belief than it does to change it. And so often when I'm working with a client in my practice, we can spend the entire first session just pulling out limiting beliefs. But as you'll learn today, you can you know, sometimes change a belief in less than 10 minutes.
You have to know what it is.
But you have to know what it is.
And that's the tricky part. So limiting beliefs tend to be more unconscious. They're really conscious, you probably would have already thought them through and began to change them. Sometimes just making them conscious begins to change them, because you get some distance from it. And if you think about a belief is an idea you hold to be true, but it's also a generalization about things. If I say the world is a dangerous place, well, there are places where the world is a dangerous place, right? We can all think of neighborhoods here in the Bay Area where you wouldn't want to be hanging out at night, right? Because it could be dangerous there. Or you may not want to swim in certain places because the riptides are there. And so there are dangerous places in the world. But if you overgeneralize it, then you're looking for dangers that don't necessarily exist, right? So it's this idea of generalizations that can be an issue. So there are some of the kinds of beliefs that we want to look at. If you look on page 20.
And you start in the middle of the page. And again, you'll have to bear with us with the formatting. So page 20, and you'll look in the middle. And in the very middle of the page, it says how to identify and recognize your limiting beliefs. And what we're doing is we're looking from the middle of page 20 to the bottom. It says three quick ways to develop beliefs. And then
to
identify beliefs. And then also, if you look at page 21.
The top half of that page.
The top half. And it might even help if you just, you know, kind of go like that.
One kind of belief that's often, and what we'd like you to do is, again, if you can find a belief to work on here that isn't your deepest issue, the first time you try it, you're going to be more likely to be successful. Often we have beliefs about our capabilities. How many of you can't do certain things well? How many of you learned in school you couldn't do certain things well? I can't dance, I can't sing, I'm not good at sports, I'm no good at math. I'm clumsy, I can't find directions. So almost all of us have some kind of belief that came from our childhood experiences. I remember when I was in the fourth grade, all the kids were standing up singing, and all of a sudden my teacher looked at me and she went, "You." And I went, "Me?" And she said, "Yeah." And she said, "You come over here and sit down. You're off tune. So sit down. You can't sing." But then she let the other kids sing. So I sat there kind of embarrassed, you know, in front of all these other kids. But I developed a belief for a long time that I could never learn to sing properly. So I couldn't do it, you know. So I remember I'd be in these contexts where everybody would be singing. I'd be sort of lip syncing it so I wouldn't embarrass myself as a kid. So you can develop a belief like that. It can be some experience like that that's a little bit
traumatic. I had one, I can't do math. And even in college, I was a straight A student with the exception of math, and I had to take math 101. I waited till the last quarter of my senior year. I went and literally cried and begged the professor to give me a C minus, and you know, he said if I could get a 50% or higher he would pass me, and I somehow managed to do it. But I had like a almost phobia, but it was really more a deeper belief that I just couldn't do math. So that's another one of those type of skill set type limiting beliefs.
So if you look on page 20, you'll see that there's some of these beliefs about what you're capable of. I can't do this.
So we're at the bottom portion of page 20 where it says three quick ways to begin to identify beliefs. So the first one is you just think of something that you're not good at. So I'm no good at math, or
But math's only an example. So think of what you think you're not good at. It could be sports or dancing or meeting new people or whatever it is that's a capability that you don't have.
Maybe I can't ask for money to get funding, or I can't start a business, or I can't make a relationship last.
Now, if you notice the structure of beliefs, you find that there are basically, there's four categories of beliefs. First one has to do with cause.
These are what we actually call cause-effect type beliefs.
It's like X causes Y. We explain things all the time. This is true because, you know, I'll never have a good relationship because I'm not attractive. When we do our Wealthy Mind programs, we hear a lot of things like, you know, I'll never be able to get ahead because, and then people have some reason why, because I'm a woman, because I live in a part of the country that's not doing well, because, and so people have all these different reasons why they can't do well. Because I'm stupid, I don't know enough.
Not smart enough, because I'm not smart enough, because I'm not pretty enough. I mean, I can't do X because, so there's those cause-effect type beliefs. That's the first of four categories.
And the second one that's similar is meaning. And it's, here in NLP we call it a complex equivalency in linguistics, but it's X equals Y. The look on your face means this. Have you ever had somebody interpret your behavior?
Yeah.
That smile means, she smiled at me, she must be in love with me.
Yeah.
Right. Or she smiled at me, she must have been laughing at me. Or she smiled at me, she must have been thinking of something else. I mean, you know, it's whatever belief system we've got underneath it that's going to define that. So X equals Y, we have meaning. I remember working with a minister, and he was an older guy, and he said he had arthritis, and he was wanting to get more flexible. And he said, I don't know why I'm being punished this way. You know, I've tried to live such a good life. So his physical issue, he thought it was he's being punished in some way. But if a physician had done it, a physician would have said, oh, well, you know, you've got this body process going on. And, of course, as a NLP or a psychotherapist, I said, well, there's a conflict here you've got somewhere that's causing this self-neglect that is a metaphor for what's happening. So it's we make meaning of things all the time.
I had a client who had a belief. We were working on relationship issues, and her belief was that men are not the sharpest tool in the kit. And that was a meaning type belief that about men, you know, that for her that
men
in general meant that they were stupid.
Well, what did she get? Where did she get that idea from?
But she couldn't understand why she kept, you know, attracting these alcoholic boyfriends. And so that's a belief about meaning. And you might even have relationship meanings, like being in a relationship.
Means you lose your freedom.
Exactly. So that's a belief about me. So this first category is cause-effect beliefs. The second category is beliefs about meaning. And then there's the third category, which are beliefs about possibility and impossibility.
And capability. There's two kinds of beliefs there. One is called outcome expectancy. Is the outcome possible? If you don't believe the outcome's possible, how much energy are you going to put into something? Are we going to do the impossible thing? I mean, who's that?
Yes.
Don Quixote always was chasing windmills and things. So it's like doing the, for example, let me give you some examples. When working in health as much as I do, when AIDS first became known, there's a general belief even among the medical field that if it was a death sentence, if somebody got HIV, they were going to die. And if you believe that, what kind of energy are you going to put into trying to get well? People didn't, and neither did the medical profession. So now we have lots of examples of people that were diagnosed with HIV back in 1982, and they're still fine. They may culture for the blood, but they don't have any of the symptoms. So now there's not that belief anymore, and so big strides have been made. You know, I've had a number of clients that have been very successful working with themselves and never having it blossom into anything else.
I had a friend that was having all these serious health issues, and he finally found out that he had HIV, and he was actually relieved because he thought it was something, you know, way worse. And his sister happened to be a doctor that specialized in infectious disease, and so he knew that, you know, he could live a nice, good life with the right medication. So
if the outcome's not possible, we have a hopeless situation. Chris and I were doing a training in Australia, and we were talking to this taxi driver, and he said, I can tell from your accent you're American. He said, you're so lucky to live in America because, you know, there's a lot of possibilities there. He said, but you can never get ahead in the Australian economy. If you have that belief, that's a hopeless belief. Remember, we've had a lot of people in our wealthy mind say things like, well, you know, there's no way I'm going to be able to get a decent job or start a new career because I'm too old, you know. One woman who's 48 tell us that. She was too old to do what she really wanted.
Or the opposite, I'm too young to do what I want.
Yeah. Can't do it. Nobody will take me seriously. I'm too young. So that's hopeless. We can also have helpless. That's where it's possible in the world, but not possible for me. So this is things like capability skills. Well, maybe you can dance, but I'm too clumsy. Or you can do math, but you're a lot smarter than me. So it's, I do it?
Right, or maybe I don't have the magic ingredient for what it takes to start a business. So it's this sense of like not you know, having what it takes.
I can never learn to manage money. I don't have what it takes to sustain something. I can never do sales and talk to people that way. There's no way I could get in front of a group and talk. You know, think of all the things that are kind of beliefs about what's possible for us. These are all about limitations. There's some really deep core ones that are very common in virtually every culture, too. Chris mentioned the one about, in Japan, there's this idea the tallest nail gets pounded down. That's saying, if you outshine everybody in your family system, it could be dangerous for our family. We need to stick together, right? But if you go to virtually any culture, you'll find an example of that. In Australia, it's the tallest poppy gets picked. And what is it and do you know what it is in America?
Whack-a-mole. No.
Don't get too big for your britches.
Yeah. And in England, it's don't move beyond your station.
Or don't get too big for your boots is the other one. You hear those idioms. In Holland, it's don't stick your head out of the cornfield. Somebody will cut it off.
But also, shoemaker is stay with your anvil.
Sorry?
So what is it?
Shoemaker, stay with your anvil. Or with the, how do you call the, schoenmaker, bleib bij
de. Like the cobbler, stay with your tools.
Right.
Yeah.
Basically. That's another Dutch one. I was working in Holland with a guy, and he had come up with this incredible invention, and he was afraid to go do it. He had a good government job. And he said, I really want to do that. But, you know, he said, you don't want to stick your head out of the cornfield. Somebody will cut it off. But I think it's a basic human kind of thing that's why it exists in all the cultures is we stick together. In China, there's this idea of the in-group and the out-group. And the in-group is our family clan, and it's like our people and those people out there we have to protect ourselves from. It's a very old idea that I think exists everywhere.
And you'll find in yourself and working with others that these beliefs are more common than you would think. And not only that, but
with us.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all of us have these kind of things.
Yep.
Mexican or Japanese crab bucket theory.
What's that?
I've heard it from Mexico, but it's also I've heard from Japan.
What is it?
That there's two buckets of crabs. One is an American crab, and it's got a lid on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got a lid on it. And the Japanese crabs, and it has no lid on it. I was like, what's going on there? Well, the American one, if you take the lid off, the crabs will crawl out one by one. Some of them will get up to the top and get out. Okay. But the Japanese ones, whenever one, or the Mexican one, as it's going up, the other crabs will pull it down. Mm-hmm. So in other words, your ability to get beyond your station in life or just surpass the nepotism or things in society.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plus you get these other kind of beliefs within a culture, like in Mexico. One of the things we find, because we do a lot of training in Mexico, is a real common limiting belief is you need to take care of everybody else first and you come last. And if you don't, you're a bad person, right?
Or don't put others, before
you don't put yourself
or don't put yourself before others, or you always put the family first. So it was interesting. I had a belief growing up that I'm second because my brother was just this bigger than life force, real handsome, real athletic. He looked like Donny Osmond at the peak of Donny Osmond's fame, and we were living in Utah, you know, where Donnie was filming the Donnie and Marie show, so he got a lot of mileage from that. So I had the belief that I come second. And so we did some belief change work around that. You want to tell them what happened?
Well, she did it that, you know, I come first. I mean, which is...
And virtually, if we pull up to the airport to check in, I'll get there and suddenly there'll be a line of 20 people behind me. If we go to the sandwich counter, it's so weird how when you change these beliefs, that kind of thing happens. And we'll show you some great way to change your belief this afternoon. But first, you have to know that they're there. I didn't even know that was there. Tim helped pull that one out. So, and we'll help you find them as well. Yes.
Hey, interesting. Back in, I'm from former Soviet Union, so back we used to have this saying, "Let my sheep to eat that wolf."
Let you so, the sheep
to eat the wolf.
Let my sheep eat the wolf.
Yeah.
So basically. Families were pushing kids out to survive and to follow their dream, and they call it a wolf, that you can be eaten by the wolf. You have to be really focused and popped up.
Yes.
So, and I see a lot of them coming to the United States, they're succeeding and succeeding.
They do, yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
Comment.
Real quickly, what's the word list?
Yeah. That's this. So we have beliefs about, do we deserve it or not? And, you know, really very, very common class of beliefs are beliefs that you get love for what you do and not who you are. It's really common in our culture, in our world. You're a good kid if you get good grades. Go be a good girl and clean up your room. So what do you start linking together? Being a good person with doing something, you know. Daddy will love you if you go mow the lawn, you know, those kind of things. And it's like, so, or you get in trouble if you don't do well. You bring home a report card that isn't a really good one and your parents get mad at you. What does that mean? That you're not a good person or something. So do you deserve it? Are you, if you don't work really hard for it, do you deserve to have it? How many of you have gotten something sort of without putting much effort into it, and you didn't value it very much? Mm-hmm. Like you went to a class and you got a really good grade and you thought, well, I didn't work very hard on that. I really deserve this A. That might indicate underneath it's this other belief that if you don't work really hard and do stuff, you don't deserve to have it.
I turned out a promotion like that once.
Did you? You got a promotion like that once?
I was offered a promotion and I said, you know, I haven't worked hard enough to get it.
I haven't worked hard enough to get it. So there's a belief, yeah, you have to work hard to get really what you want, you know. So.
And that's actually one of the single most common beliefs we've come across in our travels in every country is you have to work hard to make money.
Or be successful.
Or to be successful.
So these are different categories of beliefs. So we'd like to have you have a bit of an experience here and begin to look beneath the surface. Our goal here for this process, what we're trying to do is help you identify something to work on here, but also to help sensitize you to hearing these limiting beliefs. If you start hearing beliefs from that are limiting from other people, or, you know, I journal frequently, almost every day, and when I journal, often my beliefs will kind of pop out. I go, ah, good, I found one, I can change it. If you don't find them, you can't change them. So I always think unconscious beliefs are like those old black and white swamp monsters and stuff. You know, you're slogging through the swamp and finally get out and you start crawling onto land and this monster hand pulls you back in the water. You know, and I think beliefs can operate that way if you don't identify and deal with them and keep after you. So we're going to ask you to get with another person. And on page 20, so if you go through the bottom half, see these three quick ways to begin to eliminate limiting beliefs. So get with a partner, go over this, so you can have a dialogue. Dialogue always brings out more than just thinking in your own head. about, think of something you may not be good at. And don't go into a story about it.
So the middle of 20 and then down to the middle of 21.
Don't get caught up in a story about it. If you say something like, well, I can't sing because Mrs. Anderton told me to shut up and sit down, that's enough of the story. You don't need to go on about Mrs. Anderton or you. Lose your focus. So keep in mind your goal is to find a limiting belief.
And we just gave some
you had
examples.
A Mrs. Anderton?
I did.
Yeah. Was she your fourth grade teacher? Can you sing? No.
I don't do any things.
Ah. The same one that Mrs. Anderson traveled around.
So we generated some examples there for you to get your creative juices going.
And idea starters.
Idea starters.
But fill in your own content here. These are just ideas. I can't start my own business because it may not be an interest of yours, but what's something you can't begin or do that you really want to do?
So go through those first three categories. Have a dialogue. And what should we do about 15 minutes here?
Yeah, we'll take about 15 minutes each. That'll give you plenty of time to find a belief. The more you find, the better you are off. So take 15 minutes, then switch roles, and come back at 12:45. So, were you able to find a limiting belief? That was our goal.
Was there anybody that did not find a limiting belief? You didn't? Okay, well, we'll find
we'll
one.
Give you one.
Yeah.
We've all got them.
We all have them.
By the way,
the problem is it's 100% you should not. I cannot put 100% on me. It depends on the situation all the time.
Yeah.
Trust my guts to see
We'll find one because you're just dealing. We just gave you one category of examples of how to find.
We're
going to
do a little bit more with this.
We'll do more.
And let's actually, before we break for lunch, if you look in your booklets on the next page. I think page 23, and there's something called the limiting belief checklist. And take a minute with this, and in the middle of the page, on page 23, it says limiting belief checklist. And just those are some examples that are sort of common. So if you do that, page 23 and 24, go through those and see if any of those resonate. And before you do, think of it this way. Sometimes you look at it and you go, I can't trust anyone. You know, if you go intellectual with it, you'll probably say, well, I'm an adult, I don't do that. But if you really think about it, you go, that behavior's in me somewhere. So check it out. If it resonates, put a check. Nobody has to look at this but you.
And so it's page 23, thanks, Tim.
And
also page 24 and then the top of page 25. So the middle half. Okay. So take a moment and just take the next till 1 o'clock and go over page 23, 24, and then the top of page 25. And again, this is just for you, and the goal is to help you identify even more limiting beliefs to work with.
If it really resonates, put a couple of check marks by it.
And if some of you are done, while we're waiting for the other ones, you can also read through the list on the bottom of 21 and the top of 22 where it says beliefs about cause, about meaning, possibility, and we list out examples of beliefs there, and you can look over those and see if any resonate with you or you get a zinger off of those as well. So you'll have more time at lunch to review this, and of course we'll be showing you afterwards how to change a belief when you come back. The lists, all the lists of beliefs that you've been looking at, Tim and I generated those from clients that we've worked with or just participants in classes, and have found that those are a lot of beliefs that come up for people in a lot of different contexts. So our goal or hope is that by the time you come back from lunch, everybody will have a belief that you can work with. And then what's great, as I said, we'll show you an elegant and practical, useful process for how to change these and release them fairly quickly. And not only that, but then replace them with an empowering belief.
Comments, questions? So let's recommend you eat a light lunch and come back ready to get an important change. So come back at 2:15 for the bookstore or 2:30 for start time.
We'll see you in 90 minutes.